proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton. I want to welcome you on today's program. Now, today we're going to be studying a very somber subject of the Holocaust. Perhaps no other subject in recent history challenges our minds so much as the Holocaust. In one way, we want to remember that here at International Board of Jewish Missions, every year we have an annual Holocaust Education Day, and this year will be held on March 20th of 2015. I invite you to come to that, located right here in the greater Chattanooga area in Hickson and our mission headquarters. Now, as we remember the tragic loss of the 6 million Jews who perished in the Holocaust, we also remember those who stood for the persecuted. In Jerusalem, you can visit a beautiful and living memorial to those called Righteous Among the Nations at Yad Vashem. Today, there are about 24,800 people from 44 countries that are officially recognized by the organization. During World War II, several helped Jewish people, as well as others that were affected by the Nazis. Some may have given food, while others may have provided temporary lodging to those in flight. The memorial in Jerusalem reflects those who put their lives on the line in an effort to save lives. Here are a few of their stories. Let's first of all look at probably one that most of our audience has heard before, and that is Oskar Schindler, who is in Germany. Now, born on April 20th of 1908, Oskar Schindler was a member of the Nazi Party who helped rescue over 1,200 Jewish people during the Holocaust. He employed them in his enamelware and ammunition factories in Poland, in what is today now the Czech Republic. He worked tirelessly to protect his workers from the Nazis. Schindler instructed his secretary, Majtek Pemper, to create a list of workers that were names from the Warsaw Ghetto. By the war's end in 1945, Schindler had spent nearly his entire fortune bribing the Nazi SS to save Jewish lives. His life is reflected in the 1982 novel Schindler's Ark, as well as in the 1993 Steven Spielberg movie, Schindler's List. He died at the age of 66 in 1974 and now is buried in Mount Zion in Jerusalem. Another one of the righteous Gentiles who helped save Jewish lives was Irina Sendler in Poland. Born in February 15, 1910, Irina Sendler was a Polish Catholic nurse and social worker that was instrumental in rescuing over 2,500 children from the Warsaw Ghetto. She provided falsified identification documents, as well as arranged housing for the children as they sought escape from the Nazis. Irina Sendler worked in the resistance movement with the Polish underground and was finally arrested by the Nazis and condemned to death, but managed to escape her execution and survive the war. Her life and work has been presented in a PBS documentary, Irina Sendler in the Name of Their Mothers, and a Hallmark Hall of Fame presentation, The Courageous Heart of Irina Sendler. Irina Sendler died in 2008 in Warsaw, Poland, at the age of 98. We move on now to talk about Janusz Korczak, who is a Polish-Jewish educator. Janusz Korczak, the pen name for Henryk Goldschmidt, was born in 1878 and was a children's author, educator, and pediatrician. He spent many years as a director working in an orphanage in Warsaw, Poland. Though offered several opportunities for release, Korczak refused to accept freedom while his orphans were deported to the Treblinka extermination camp in 1942. He perished along with 192 children in the gas chambers. A memorial is dedicated to Janusz Korczak at Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, as well as one in Warsaw. Now we move on to a story that I think is rather fascinating, and this has to do with Senpo Sugihara, who is the vice consul for the Empire of Japan in Lithuania. Chiyun Sugihara was born in 1900 in Yaizu, Japan. Senpo, as he was referred to be called, helped to save approximately 6,000 Lithuanian and Polish Jews from the Holocaust by issuing transit visas so they could travel to Japanese territory. Now, as we think about the lives of the people we've just mentioned, there is a famous Talmudic saying that reflects the precious work of the righteous Gentiles, where it says, "He who saves a single life saves the entire world." As many stood up for righteousness in the face of evil, even so we are called upon to stand up for truth and those in peril. Jesus recognizes those who minister to others in need during their time of difficulty, according to Matthew chapter 25. When you minister to those in need, you are ministering to Jesus. Now then, let's turn our attention to Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman, with today's Bible lesson.
Thank you for tuning in to our radio program. Beginning with this session, we will look at the Jewish tabernacles and the items contained inside it. Mishkan, the Hebrew noun translated as tabernacle, derived from the verb shakan, meaning to abide. That verbal form appeared in Numbers chapter 24, in connection with the Israelites residing in their tents. The noun Mishkan could refer to an animal's den, as it did in Job chapter 39, when God said, quote, "Whose house have I made the wilderness and the barren land his dwellings?" Unquote. The term Mishkan could also allude to a human residence. Most of the time, though, Mishkan specifically designated the Jewish tabernacle in the wilderness. God designed that structure as a place where he could live in the midst of the Israelite encampment. As recorded in Exodus chapter 25, quote, "Let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I show thee after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it," unquote. God never intended for the tabernacle to represent his actual residence on earth. In 1 Kings chapter 8, Solomon rhetorically asked, quote, "Will God indeed dwell on the earth?" Unquote. He answered his own question, noting, quote, "Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee." Unquote. As a spirit, God did not need a building in which he could live. The tabernacle, though, made it possible for God to manifest his presence among his people, in a manner of speaking. The amount of detail that God provided about the tabernacle's materials and contents indicated the degree of its importance in the spiritual life of the Jewish nation. God wanted the Jewish people to appreciate their unique relationship with him every time they visited the tabernacle. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, God gave the Jewish people one reason why he commanded them to build that tabernacle. He said, quote, "Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest, but in the place which the Lord shall choose in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee," unquote. Even hundreds of years later, according to 1 Samuel chapter 1, Elkanah and his family continued to bring their sacrifices to the tabernacle every year. As that passage implied, God continued to use the tabernacle as a meeting place, even after the Israelites no longer lived in the wilderness. According to Joshua chapter 18, the Jews set up the tabernacle at the city of Shiloh, where they subdivided the land of Canaan among the Jewish tribes. The tabernacle remained at Shiloh until Solomon had the temple constructed. Afterward, he brought the Ark of the Covenant up to Jerusalem, as recorded in 1 Kings chapter 8. The tabernacle itself contained an area surrounded by a high fence. In Exodus chapter 27, God provided detailed information about the dimensions of that area. The northern and the southern sides of that fence each measured 100 cubits, that is, approximately 150 feet. The eastern and western sides of the fence each measured 10 cubits, approximately 15 feet. 20 pillars marked the northern and southern perimeters of the tabernacle. 10 posts marked the eastern and western sides. Each of these pillars contained a brass socket with silver hooks and fillets, designed for hanging curtains upon them. God commanded the Jewish people to make these pillars 5 cubits in height, measuring approximately 7.5 feet high. God directed the Israelites to hang coverings upon the pillars. The material for these curtains consisted of fine twined linen. Some commentators have opined that the Jewish people acquired this material from the Egyptians before the Jews left that country. Linen came from flax. Laborers would take lengthy fibers from the stems, make thread from them, and use a loom to weave those threads into garments. Wearing fine linen characterized the person as being a highly placed official in Egyptian society. This was illustrated in the 41st chapter of Exodus. When the Pharaoh of Egypt promoted Joseph, he clothed him in fine linen. Years later, King Ahasuerus of Persia clothed Mordecai in fine linen, as recorded in the 8th chapter of Esther. After that monarch named Mordecai as Haman's replacement. The rich man described by Jesus Christ in Luke chapter 16 was clothed in purple and fine linen. God also used the expression fine linen metaphorically in Ezekiel. In other words, linen woven with a number of twisted threads. The priestly garments were the only other items made of fine twined linen, as noted in Exodus chapter 28. Thus, fine twine linen might have denoted that God had consecrated both the tabernacle and the Jewish priests unto his service. The exquisite embroidery emphasized the significance of that relationship. A gate stood at the eastern end of the tabernacle. This entrance provided the only way of access to the structure. According to Exodus chapter 27, each side of this gate measured 15 cubits in width, requiring three pillars to hang curtains over it. The fence surrounding the tabernacle and its coverings accomplished several functions. Its primary purpose involved designating a certain area of land as, quote, holy ground, unquote. As such, the fence around the tabernacle served as a boundary marker between an area designated for sacred matters and area designated for secular affairs. The posts for the hangings measured 5 cubits, 7.5 feet in height. Perhaps God ordered the pillars made such a height in order to discourage any idle Israelites from looking over the curtains to peer into the tabernacle courtyard. The gate to the courtyard provided the only way that those bringing sacrifices to the priests could enter into the courtyard. This arrangement allowed the priests to control and to restrict access to that area. Only those having official business at the tabernacle, such as bringing offerings, only those having official business at the tabernacle could enter through the gate. The outward features associated with the tabernacle served as types and symbols of God's person and God's work. Thereby, God revealed various aspects of his character and his ministry through these items. The fine linen of the curtains depicted the righteousness, the spotless righteousness associated with God. Those who return to earth with Jesus Christ, according to Revelation 19, those who return to earth with Jesus Christ wore clothing made from fine linen. This standing came from, quote, the righteousness of God, which is by faith of Jesus Christ, unto all and upon all them that believe, unquote, as Paul wrote in Romans chapter 3. Every Jew who saw the curtains of the tabernacle would therefore get a reminder of that righteousness which belonged only to God. As structures designed to support the curtains, the pillars surrounding the tabernacle's courtyard could represent the power of God to sustain and uphold all things. Hannah used that expression figuratively in 1 Samuel chapter 2, when speaking about how, quote, the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, unquote. God echoed this statement in Psalm 75. Paul also employed the term pillar metaphorically in 1 Timothy chapter 3. With regard to the church being, quote, the pillar and ground of truth, unquote. The gate at entrance to the courtyard limited access to that part of the tabernacle. As such, it could allude to Jesus Christ as the door, the only way of salvation. A door controls the entrance to and exit from an enclosed area. In John chapter 10, the Savior told the Jewish audience, quote, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture, unquote. By doing so, he informed them that the only way to become one of his sheep, in other words, to enjoy his protection, the only way to become one of his sheep involved coming to God the Father through him, Jesus Christ. In John chapter 14, Jesus Christ said something similar to Philip when he told him, quote, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me, unquote. The exterior furnishings associated with the tabernacle thus contained a series of object lessons for the Israelites. The curtains represented the boundaries that God set between secular matters and spiritual matters. The pillars depicted the foundations upon which those curtains rested, foundations established by God. The door pointed to Jesus Christ as the only way to come to God the Father. We've reached the end of this radio Bible study. We invite you to tune in for future broadcasts about the tabernacle and the items inside.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.